He had a small wooden table next to his Weber grill. I moved the table so it was under the window, climbed up on it, and peeked into Morelli's kitchen. Gabriella had draped her jacket over one of the two chairs at Morelli's small kitchen table. She was wearing a knee-length black pencil skirt, a silky black tank top that could pass for lingerie, and black strappy Chanel sandals that were trimmed in pearls and showed off her perfect pedicure and blood-red painted toes. She was casually lounging against the counter, a glass of white wine in her hand, laughing at something Morelli said. Morelli was close to her, and he was smiling. The Chardonnay bottle was on the counter. Bob was lying under Morelli's kitchen table, and he was looking like he couldn't believe this was happening, like he wanted to choke on his own vomit. Okay, maybe it wasn't Bob that wanted to choke. Maybe it was me. I was really close to spewing all over Morelli's window. I climbed off the table, returned it to the grill, and speed-walked back to the Buick. I kicked the beast's white walls a bunch of times, wrenched the door open, got behind the wheel, and burst into tears. By the time I pulled into my apartment building's parking lot, I was pretty much done sobbing. Over the past couple of months, I'd acquired a laundry list of things worth crying about. My love life, my job, my apartment, my squint lines, my inability to cook, shoot, figure out streaming, understand the cloud, or complete any of the books recommended by Oprah. The list was endless. So hopefully the last 20 minutes of blubbering covered all the bases, and I was good for another couple months. The real bummer in all this was Gabriella. She was a double whammy. She had her hooks into my ex-boyfriend, and I was pretty sure she was trying to steal my treasure. The most annoying part to all this was that I knew next to nothing about her, and Morelli undoubtedly knew all sorts of things. He probably knew her last name and where she was living, and he probably knew why she was here. The obvious, intelligent, mature way to go about this was to simply have a conversation with him. Not at this precise moment, of course, but in the near future. I marched up the stairs to my apartment and found Potts sitting on the floor with his back to my door.
"I put a Band-Aid and some antiseptic on the hole where the dart went in, and I'm back on the job," he said, getting up.
"How did you get here?"
"My mom brought me. She was going out to the market anyway."
I opened the door, and Potts followed me into the kitchen. I gave Rex a pretzel, and I gave Potts a bottle of water. I turned the television on and gave him the remote. "I have work to do in my bedroom," I said. "Don't move off the couch. If you decide to go home, leave me a note."
"I'm not going home. I'm here forever."
"You're a nut."
"I know," Potts said. "I can't help it."
I closed my bedroom door and flopped onto my bed. I didn't have work to do. I needed a nap before I tackled the Morelli-Gabriella connection. Grandma called at 5:45 p.m. "Your mother made too much spaghetti," she said. "Do you want to come to dinner?" I cracked my door and looked out. Potts was still there. "Is your mother expecting you to be home for dinner?" I asked him.
"No, I told her I was working the night shift."
"Can I bring a friend?" I asked Grandma.
"You can bring an army. Your mother was hitting the hooch, and next thing, poof, we got 2 weeks' worth of pasta."
"This is getting serious," Potts said from the back seat of the Buick. "You're taking me to meet your parents. Do they know about us?"
I cut my eyes to the rearview mirror and glanced at him. "What's to know?"
"That I protect you? That we're life partners?"
"We aren't life partners. I bailed you out of jail, and now I can't get rid of you."
"Good thing, too. I already kept you from getting shot, and then I took a syringe in the thigh for you."
This is why I don't keep a loaded gun. I might have been tempted to shoot one of us. Chapter 15. Grandma was waiting at the door when I arrived with Potts. "You remember George Potts," I said to Grandma. "You met him at the mole hole."
"I'm her bodyguard," Potts said. "It's my life's work to protect her, and we might eventually be a couple."
I kicked Potts in the shin.
Ow, he said. Why did you do that? I have thin skin and my blood vessels are very close to the surface. I'm going to have a bruise. I might even get a hematoma.
It was an accident, I said. It was an involuntary action, and I didn't kick you hard.
I'm very sensitive to pain because of my PTSD.
PTSD is serious, Grandma said. Where were you stationed?
Newark,
Potts said. Grandma nodded. That explains it. My father was already at the table.
It's after 6 o'clock,
he said.
What's the holdup?
We were waiting for Stephanie and her guest, Grandma said. My father looked up.
Guest?
This is George Potts, I said, seating him in the chair next to me, putting myself between him and my father. My mother came in with 2 big bowls of spaghetti, and Grandma and I went to the kitchen to help with the rest of the food. Meatballs and red sauce, Italian bread from the bakery, a bowl of fresh grated Parmesan Reggiano, an antipasto platter, red wine. Potts took a few pieces from the antipasto platter and passed on everything else.
I break out in hives if I eat tomatoes, he said, and I'm allergic to hard cheese and gluten.
Is that from the PTSD? Grandma asked.
No, Potts said. It's genetic on my mother's side of the family. We're all allergy prone.
That must be terrible, Grandma said.
It's a cross to bear, Potts said.
My mother poured herself a goblet of wine. God bless, she said. Grandma filled her wine glass, Potts and I passed on the wine, and my father kept his head down, forking in spaghetti and meatballs.
This is very good antipasto,
Potts said. You can take some home with you, Grandma said. Where do you live? Are you local?
I live with Stephanie, Potts said.
Everyone stopped eating and looked at me. Pay no attention, I said. It's the PTSD. My father accepted that as a decent explanation and returned to his meatballs. My mother poured herself more wine. My grandmother wouldn't let it go. I understand some of those PTSD people are homeless, she said. Are you one of those? Potts lives with his parents on Porter Street, I said. That's a nice neighborhood, Grandma said. My father picked his head up.
Cheese.
I grabbed a bowl of cheese and passed it over to him. Have you had any luck getting the tunnels mapped? Grandma asked me. I'm working on it, I said. It might take a while. I don't know if I got a while, Grandma said. I need us to find the treasure soon so I can get to Hawaii during the whale season. My father perked up at that, undoubtedly calculating if he had enough money to get her on a plane.
What tunnels? What treasure are you talking about?
Potts asked. There are tunnels under Trenton, Grandma said, and we think there's treasure in one of them.
I wouldn't put treasure in a tunnel, Potts said. The tunnel could collapse and then you couldn't get to the treasure. And besides, I don't like tunnels. They don't have windows.
That's something to think about, Grandma said. Where would you hide treasure?
That's an interesting question. If I was a pirate, I'd bury it on an island or put it in a cave that led out to the ocean. If I was a king, I'd put it somewhere in my castle.
Suppose you were a hitman for the mob, Grandma said.
In the old-time movies, it's always in a big safe, Potts said. And the safe would be in the back room of a speakeasy or a strip club like the Mole Hole. I couldn't figure out where the money was all the time in The Sopranos. I think it must have been in the strip club sometimes, or it could have been offshore, or the money could be in a mobster's house. In the Godfather movie, they had the house on Long Island, but it was in Staten Island in real life. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, Grandma said.
110 Longfellow Avenue,
my father said.
Do we have dessert?
I got Potts settled into the back seat at 7:30 and drove him home, taking a detour past Morelli's house. Lights were on in the front room. His green SUV was still parked at the curb. The Mercedes was gone. I blew out a sigh and slumped in my seat a little.
What?
Potts said.
When I sigh like that, it always means something.
It's my life, I said. It's confusing.
You don't look confused. You look like you have it all figured out. Except, and I don't mean to be critical, but you don't seem entirely suited to being a bounty hunter. You don't have a gun or anything, and you don't have a leather jacket. And bounty hunters on television are always kicking doors open, and I don't think you could do that in your sneakers. You'd break a bone in your foot.
I guess I'm a bounty hunter by default. When I got out of college, I worked in retail. I got laid off, and I couldn't get another job, so I blackmailed my cousin Vinny into hiring me.
What would you like to be? What's your dream job?
Potts asked. I don't know. I might want to be Indiana Jones.
That wouldn't be my choice, Potts said. He was always getting beat up and shot at, and once a monkey tried to poison him. Of course, that doesn't sound too different than your current job, so I can see why you would find it appealing.
What's your dream job?
I don't want a job, Potts said. I had a couple jobs, and I didn't like them. I like where I'm at now. I live at home and play video games in my pajamas, and now I'm your bodyguard. I got the idea from Banger Race. It's this video game about aliens disguised as geeks, and this one alien, Mugman, falls in love with the princess and realizes his life purpose is to be her bodyguard and protect her.
So you're Mugman?
I'm trying to emphasize.
How's it fitting so far?
It's not perfect.
I'm not a princess, I said.
That's okay. I'm not actually Mugman.
I reached Porter Street and stopped in front of Potts's house. I'm staying with a friend tonight, I told him. Do not sleep in front of my door.
I could sleep in front of your friend's door, he said.
I appreciate the offer, but I'll be safe with this friend.
It's a boyfriend, isn't it? I bet he's really good-looking and he has muscles.
He's not a boyfriend. He's just a friend. Truth is, I didn't know how to categorize Ranger. He was more than just a friend, but he didn't feel like a boyfriend. There were times when our relationship felt more like a marriage. There was an acceptance of personality that was sometimes lacking between Morelli and me. Maybe that was because Ranger and I had no illusions about a binding, long-term commitment. There wasn't as much at stake between us. I waited until Potts disappeared inside his house before I drove off. I returned to Hamilton, cruised past the bail bonds office on my way to State Street, and I picked up a tail. It looked like a dark-colored SUV. I couldn't see the occupants. I called Rangeman Control and asked if it was one of their cars. I was told that it wasn't, and I was patched over to Ranger. I'm pretty sure I'm being followed, I told him. It's not like they're being subtle about it. They're right on my bumper.
I can see you on my screen, he said. You're about a half mile away. Go straight into the garage.
The car disappeared a block before Rangeman. The gate was already open for me. A Rangeman car was idling nearby. I slipped into the garage and parked in one of Ranger's spaces. I took the elevator to the 7th floor and let myself into Ranger's apartment. He was waiting for me in the kitchen.
Calvin said you didn't have a tail when you pulled in, Ranger said.
They cut away at Monroe Street.
Any idea who they were?
Yes, that's why I'm here.
I thought you were here for my sheets and my shower.
I smiled. I've been found out.
I'm having a late dinner. Ella left me a salad that would feed 4 people if you want to join me.
Thanks, but I had dinner with my parents.
Wine?
Yes. I sat across from him at his dining room table and sipped my wine while he ate.
Talk to me, Ranger said.
Charlie Shines brought in some muscle from Florida. I ran across some of the new goons today. Apparently, I'm on their to-snatch list. 2 of them had Grandma and me at gunpoint, but Potts bumbled in and we were able to escape. I imagine they were the ones following me.
Potts?
Long story short, he's sort of a sad sack that I captured and then bailed out. It was a small bond and I put it on my credit card. Anyway, he's latched on to me. Says it's his job to be my lifelong protector. Ranger had stopped eating with the fork halfway to his mouth. Is that a grimace I just saw on your face? I asked him. I've never seen you grimace before. This is a first.
Why was he arrested?
It's not important.
I think it's important.
He had an accident in front of Tasty Bakery.
What kind of accident?
It was personal. Ranger leaned forward a little.
And?
He pooped, He pooped in front of Tasty Bakery. He's the pooper.
Ranger pressed his lips together and looked down at his plate.
Now you're trying not to laugh, I said. Go ahead and laugh. I know it's absurd. I'm stuck with the pooper.
Ranger grinned.
You said you needed help. Do you need me to get rid of Potts?
No, I have bigger problems than Potts. I was told the goons have orders to bring Grandma and me to Shine. The only way we'll be safe is if the treasure is found, Shine and Salgusta are dead or behind bars, and the hired help goes back to Florida.
Ranger nodded.
I agree. Are you making progress with the treasure hunt?
Grandma thinks the treasure is in one of the tunnels, and we should check them all out.
I can send someone into the tunnels to make sure we aren't missing something, but I would be surprised to find the treasure there. There were 4 tunnel entrances years ago, and I don't know if the system has been enlarged since then. From what I saw when we were underground, the maintenance has been minimal.
Where's the 4th entrance?
Cannon Street. The building used to be owned by Bobby Ragucci. He sold it, and I'm not sure who took it over, but it's always been a deli on the ground floor and an apartment above it.
Could the deli or the apartment contain a safe?
Ranger took his plate into the kitchen, rinsed it, and put it in the dishwasher.
We can take a look.
Now?
No. I want to send Rodriguez into the tunnel first, and I'll find out who bought the building from Ragucci.
That leaves Shine, Salgusta, and Benny the Scooch. I need their clues. I can handle Benny, but Shine and Salgusta are a problem. With Grandma's life on the line, I don't have time for dogged perseverance to get the job done. I could use some help taking them down and persuading them to hand over their clues. And I know you can be very persuasive.
Babe,
Ranger said. Chapter 16. Ranger was standing alongside the bed when I opened my eyes.
You've got 10 minutes in the bathroom and 10 minutes to eat, Ranger said. I want to be on the road in half an hour.
Where are we going? What time is it?
It's 7 o'clock. I've got Rodriguez in the tunnel. He went in at the Margot site, and that's where he's supposed to exit. I have Tank waiting for him there. We're going to Ewing Township. Shine brought 4 guys in from Miami. 2 are cheap labor and 2 are seasoned soldiers. They're staying in a house in Ewing. My source thinks Shine might be there too. I want to take a look. I'll meet you in the garage.
I dragged myself out of bed and shuffled into the bathroom. By the time I stepped out of the shower, I'd lost 15 minutes. I towel-dried my hair, got dressed in the clothes I'd dropped on the floor the night before, and went to the kitchen. I shoved a bagel into my messenger bag, found a to-go mug and filled it with coffee, black, and took off for the garage. Ranger was waiting by his Porsche Cayenne SUV.
I'm guessing from the wet hair that you needed more time.
It doesn't dry in 3 minutes.
Did you get breakfast?
I pulled the bagel out of my bag and took a bite. We got into his Cayenne and rolled out of the garage.
I didn't see the Buick in your garage just now, I said.
I had it returned to your parents' house. I'll give you a less conspicuous car. You're too easy to spot in the Buick. I could also run some security in your parents' house, but last time your father declined.
And he would probably decline again, so let's concentrate on finding the treasure.
I ate my bagel and drank my coffee while Ranger drove. It was a beautiful fall day with the promise of blue skies and a warm afternoon. Not a lot of traffic on the road yet, but in 15 minutes there would be an explosion of people heading off to work and kids going to school. We entered a neighborhood of moderately priced homes, some older single-level ranches, and some larger colonials. Ranger idled in front of a single-level ranch. 2 vehicles were in the driveway, a blue pickup and a black Escalade. Shades were drawn in the house. Ranger drove to the end of the block, made a U-turn, and parked on the opposite side of the street, 2 houses down. Ranger can go into a surveillance mode where I swear his heart rate drops to 20 beats per minute, but he's still alert and focused. My heart rate was considerably higher, and I had a problem with focus. I was watching the house, but I was wishing I was wearing clean clothes. That led me to wishing I was wearing new clothes, and from that point I went to wondering what sort of clothes I should buy. I had no clue. After a half hour of mind-numbing surveillance, the front door opened and the two suits came out and got into the Escalade. No sign of the lesser wise guys. Ranger let them get a sizable lead before following. They cruised through town, turned just before the train station, and continued on to the molehole. They parked in the lot and went inside. There were no other cars in the lot. We watched from a distance for a while. No one went in or out. No other cars entered the lot. I pulled the visor mirror down and checked out my hair. I was freak girl. I found a brush and a scrunchie in my bag and pulled my hair back into a ponytail. "What do you think they're doing in there?" I asked.
"Playing cards, watching reruns of Friends, checking in with their wives back in Miami."
"Do you think they're coming out anytime soon?"
"Babe," Ranger said.
"Just saying." Ranger called the Escalade plate and location into his control room and requested that someone place a tracking device on the SUV. He turned the ignition key on the Porsche and put it in gear.
"Let's check back on the Ewing house."
No pickup in the driveway of the Ewing house. Shades were still down. No sign of activity. No street traffic. We were parked one house away in front of a white colonial with black shutters.
"Let's take a closer look," Ranger said.
We went to the door and rang the bell. No answer. Ranger knocked. No answer. He picked the lock, and we were in. He closed and locked the door behind us.
"Bail bond enforcement," he shouted. "Anyone here?"
Nothing. We went room by room looking for information that might lead us to Shine. The furnishings were basic and beige. It didn't feel like a house that had ever been a home, possibly a safe house for the mob, or maybe a rental property. There was very little in the fridge, half and half for coffee, a loaf of white bread, some provolone cheese slices and deli ham, mustard, leftover pizza, a six-pack of beer, two tubs of ice cream in the freezer, coffee and chocolate. There were four bedrooms, two with bathrooms en suite. The other two were small and shared a bathroom. Suitcases and duffel bags were mostly unpacked and open on the floor. Beds were unmade in three rooms. The fourth room had a perfectly made bed.
"Military," Ranger said.
"It looks like they've only been here a couple days."
"My source told me they flew in on Monday. It wasn't clear if they were making a permanent move. The suits have families and houses in Miami. The other two guys are free agents. One of them is Shine's nephew."
We returned to the car, and I buckled in. "Now what?"
"Now we wait to see where the suits take us," Ranger said.
"Do you think they wear suits all the time?"
"No. I think they didn't take a lot of clothes with them."
"My old friends Chick and Ed. Do they have last names?"
"Ed Grumman and Chick Reiser," Ranger said. "The nephew is Kenny Farmer. I don't have a name for the fourth."
He pulled away from the curb.
"Do you have any other leads you'd like to run down?"
"No, but I could use some backup bringing in an FTA. Last time I tried to apprehend him, he stuck a syringe in Potts's leg. He lives on Stiller Street." Ranger drove down Stiller Street and parked behind Trotter's van. I gave him the paperwork, and he paged through it.
"This reads like bad fiction," Ranger said. "Who would be dumb enough to let this guy inject them?"
"Enough women to keep him in vodka and tequila." He gave the paperwork back to me, and we went to the door. Trotter's mother answered. She was wearing fluffy pink slippers and an orange and purple flowered tent dress that came to her knees. She had a cigarette stuck to her overinflated lower lip. "We're here to see Rodney," I said.
"He's in the kitchen," she said. "But he's busy. He might not have time to be real social."
Ranger and I stepped around her, and I wove my way through the cluttered living room and dining room. Trotter was at the kitchen table, mixing up God knows what. There were measuring spoons and cups on the table, a large unlabeled canister of white powder, a large jug of canola oil, several smaller canisters, and a large mixing bowl with some glop in it.
"Hey, Trotter," I said. "How's it going?"
"What do I have to do to get rid of you?" Trotter said. "Shoot you? Stab you? Inject you with formaldehyde?"
You're in violation of your bond agreement, Ranger said. You need to come with us.
Where'd you get the all-in-black pretty boy? Trotter asked me. He looks like he's auditioning for a television show.
Trotter scooped some glop into a measuring cup and threw it at me. I didn't move fast enough, and I got tagged in the chest. I looked down in horror, and another glob of the stuff hit me in the head.
Stop it, I said. What the heck is this stuff?
It's my special enhancement formula, Trotter said. Flour, water, oil, cream of tartar.
That's Play-Doh, I said.
My proportions are different, and I added the oil, Trotter said. My enhancement formula takes longer to set up, and it goes in smooth as silk. Problem is, sometimes it hardens like concrete. You don't want to let it sit in your hair too long.
I put my hand to the top of my head. The gunk was already starting to solidify.
Here's some more, he said, hurling another cupful of glop that caught me in the forehead and oozed down my nose.
What the fuck? I yelled at Trotter.
In my peripheral vision, I saw Ranger move toward Trotter. Stand back, I said to Ranger. He's mine. He's going down.
Oh, I'm so scared, Trotter said.
He barely got the words out of his mouth when I charged across the room, snatched him by the front of his shirt, and headbutted him. I gave him a shove. He wobbled backward and sat down hard. I called him a dumbass, dumped the remaining glop on him, and hit him in the head with the bowl. His eyes went out of focus, and I clapped cuffs on him while he was still fuzzy-brained.
Ranger went full-on grin.
Babe.
I have a headache, I said. I never headbutted anyone before.
Best display of female rage that I've seen in a long time, maybe ever. I like the part where you hit him with the bowl.
Hair is important in Jersey. You don't dump glop in a Jersey girl's hair.
No doubt, Ranger said. You have me convinced.
He yanked Trotter to his feet and dragged him toward the front door.
We're leaving, I yelled to Mrs. Trotter. Rodney is coming with us.
Okay, she answered from somewhere in the house. Have a nice day.
We got to the sidewalk. Ranger stowed Trotter in the back seat of the Porsche and opened the passenger side door for me. I'm going to make a mess of your car, I said.
Not a problem.
Ranger pulled up to the back of the police station and marched Trotter inside while I waited in the car. 10 minutes later, Ranger slid behind the wheel and handed me my body receipt.
Do you want to come back to Range Man and have me scrub you down? He asked. Or would you rather I take you home?
Home. I needed to regroup, and there was a good chance that I wouldn't be able to get all of the enhancement gunk out of my hair, and I would have to visit Salon Philip at the mall. Philip was a genius at cut and color. Hopefully, he was also a genius at gunk removal. Ranger left the police lot and joined the flow of morning traffic.
I talked to Rodriguez while I was in the police station, Ranger said. He followed every offshoot and found 3 exits, the molehole, the Margot, and the bakery. The 4th exit was cemented closed. Probably happened when Bobby Ragucci sold his property. Rodriguez said there's nothing down there but dirt and rats, but there might have been another tunnel near the Margot. There was a lot of debris and possibly a cave-in at one point. Beyond that, there's no secret hideaway where there might be a safe.
Grandma's going to be disappointed.
Why is this treasure so important to her?
She has a bucket list.
Ranger stopped for a light and looked at me.
How about you? What's in your bucket list?
I was stumped. I didn't have a bucket list. My bucket was empty. I haven't gotten around to making a bucket list, I said. Do you think that's a personal failure?
No, you're busy living every day. That's a personal triumph.
It doesn't feel like a triumph. It feels like I'm moving through my life with no important goals or aspirations.
What do you consider to be an important goal?
Being a doctor or a volcanologist or a marine biologist or finding the Ark of the Covenant. Ranger glanced over at me.
Is the Lazy Boy's treasure your Ark of the Covenant?
Maybe not the equivalent of the Ark of the Covenant, but it would be moving in the right direction.
One more reason why you need to find it.
Chapter 17.
Ranger drove into the lot to my apartment building and stopped alongside a black Honda Passport.
"This is yours," he said. "It should be unlocked. The key fob is in the gun box under the passenger seat."
He handed me a key.
"This is for the gun box. The SUV has the usual tracking device plus a rear camera that allows us to see if you're being followed."
I got out, unlocked the gun box, and got the key fob. I locked the car and waved Ranger off. I went straight to my apartment, said a fast hello to Rex, shucked my clothes, and jumped into the shower. 20 minutes later, I was in the Honda Passport with a towel wrapped around my head, and I was on my way to Salon Philip. I called Connie from the road and told her I captured Rodney Trotter, but had a slight apprehension mishap and was now booked into an immediate emergency appointment at the hair salon.
"I have my own emergency," Connie said. "Potts is on the couch, and he's humming. I'm going to put him in an Uber and send him to you."
"No. No, 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 no."
Too late. Connie was already disconnected. I reached Route 1 and took the exit to Quaker Bridge Mall. I parked by Macy's and walked through the mall with as much dignity as I could muster, considering I had a towel wrapped around my head. "Stephanie Plum," I said to the fashion-forward woman at the salon reception counter. "I have an appointment." The woman looked at my towel.
"Is this a color issue?"
"No," I said. "Play-Doh." I removed the towel, and the woman bit into her lower lip. I wasn't sure if it was to keep from laughing or gagging. She stepped from behind the counter and motioned to Philip.
"We need triage here," she said.
Potts arrived while I was in the shampoo area. He took a chair across from the reception desk and paged through the salon's magazines, occasionally looking up to make sure I wasn't being held at gunpoint. I was moved from the shampoo sink to Philip's chair, and Lula came in. She breezed past Potts and came straight to me.
"Connie said you had an incident," Lula said. "What's that about?"
"Ranger helped me apprehend Trotter, but before we got Trotter in cuffs, I got some glop thrown at me."
"It was in her hair," Philip said. "We were able to get some of it out, but I'm going to have to cut the rest."
"How much are you going to cut?" Lula asked.
"A couple inches," Philip said. "Maybe 4 or 5.
I got lightheaded, and little black dots floated in front of my eyes.
"She looks whiter than usual," Lula said.
"Deep breath," Philip said to me. "Put your head down between your legs. Don't worry, you're going to look terrific."
Potts rushed over.
"I know CPR," he said. "Does she need CPR? And I have an EpiPen. I always carry one because of my allergies. Does she need an EpiPen?"
"I'm okay," I said. "I just had a moment."
"It happens here all the time," Philip said. "It's the I'm going to cut all my hair off syndrome."
"I can't look," Lula said. "I'm going out to the mall and get a big pretzel."
"I'll stay here," Potts said, "just in case she needs my EpiPen."
"Okay, here we go," Philip said to me. "Close your eyes. Don't open them until I tell you."
I kept my eyes closed through the cutting and the styling, mostly because I didn't want to embarrass myself by fainting or shrieking or jumping out of the chair before Philip was done. I heard the hairdryer cut off. Philip did some fussing with his magic fingers, and I heard Lula barge into the salon with her spike heels clacking on the tile floor.
"Oh my God," she said. "Oh my God."
"What? What, oh my God?" I asked. "Is it good? Is it awful?" I opened my eyes. It was short and kind of cute. Big curls and waves. He'd added red highlights. I stared at myself in the mirror. "This isn't me," I said. "Who is this?"
"Girl, it's the new you," Lula said. "It's Super Steph. This is happy hair, kick-ass hair without going yesterday's punk. Kudos, Mr. P," Lula said.
"It's pretty," Potts said. "Can I touch it?"
"No," I told him, "not ever." I gave my credit card to the woman at the reception desk.
"You can't be going around in jeans and t-shirts anymore," Lula said to me. "That hair deserves better. You need a new look."
"She needs a black leather jacket," Potts said.
"Absolutely," Lula said, "with studs and bedazzle shit on it,
and then she needs a black leather bra to go under it, or maybe a red satin bustier.
That would be hot, Potts said.
I took my card back and put it in my messenger bag. I don't think I would be comfortable in a leather bra.
You gotta see the whole picture, Lula said. The hair is sexy in a sweet way, and then you pair it up with nasty clothes, and it says, hey, look at me, I'm complex.
I don't feel complex, I said.
That's on account of you're in a transitional phase in your life, what with the new hair, Lula said. You leave it to Potts and me, and we'll get you sorted out.
I've got a lot of ideas, Potts said. I've been reading the fashion and makeup magazines while I've been waiting.
I looked at Lula. I thought Connie said you had a temporary crown in place of the one that got damaged.
Yep, the cracked crown got popped off and the new temporary one got stuck on, Lula said.
And it was in the front?
Yep.
It's gone.
Say what?
Lula felt around with her tongue.
What the heck?
She went to a makeup mirror and looked at herself.
Damn, I lost my temporary.
I bet it got stuck in that big pretzel you ate, Potts said. You probably swallowed it, so you didn't actually lose it. You just have to wait until you poop it out.
I can't wait, Lula said. I'm unsightly. I got an image to protect. We're going to have to delay the makeover until I get another crown stuck on. It won't take long.
Lula hustled out of the salon, and Potts turned to me.
Now what? We could go shopping without Lula, or we could wait for Lula, or we could go to the car and make out.
Not only will we never make out, but if you ever suggest it again, I'll shoot you.
You don't have a gun, Potts said.
Okay, then I'll have someone else shoot you.
Just for suggesting we make out? That's extreme.
You could punch him in the face, the receptionist said. That might be more appropriate.
I don't like to bleed, Potts said. It gives me anxiety. I guess it would be okay if I got punched in the forehead.
An alarm went off on his phone.
What's that? The receptionist asked.
It's past lunchtime. I get low blood sugar if I don't eat on schedule,
Potts said. There's a food court in the mall, I told him. You can get something to eat there.
I can't eat at a food court because of my allergies, Potts said. There's all kinds of cross-contamination. I break out in hives and I get diarrhea if I walk through a food court. Did I tell you I'm extremely sensitive to gluten? And they let anyone work at those places, I know for a fact, because I got a job at a chicken place in a mall once. Anyway, I only worked there for a couple days because of the diarrhea from the gluten spewing out of the fry station, and that was when I moved back to my parents' house.
I know someone who would shoot him, the receptionist said.
I'll get back to you, I said to the receptionist. I walked Potts out of the salon and through the mall to the Macy's exit.
I don't see the Buick, Potts said.
I have a different car. It's a loaner from a friend.
Is it the guy you sleep with? The good-looking one with muscles?
Yes. I unlocked the Honda.
This is it? A Honda?
Potts asked.
It's nice, but I expected you to perform at Porsche level, maybe Mercedes. Boy, this is an eye-opener. Where are we going for lunch?
Giovacchini's Grocery. You can get something from the deli and we can eat at the office. I want to check in with Connie. I got Potts settled onto the faux leather couch with his chicken wrap and Pepsi, and I took the chair in front of Connie's desk. I unwrapped my ham and cheese panini and opened a small tub of coleslaw.
I like the hair, Connie said.
I nodded. Thanks, I'm getting used to it.
Lula called and told me she was back at the dentist.
Her temporary popped off. I reached into my messenger bag, pulled out the body receipt for Trotter, and handed it to Connie.
Vinny's gonna love this, Connie said. This was a high bond.
I'm gonna love it too, I said. I need the money. Connie wrote a check and slid it across her desk to me.
What do you buy him with this?
Food, clothes, maybe a manicure. My rent is due. Any more information from your mom?
The latest gossip is that the Lazy Boys are having problems. Luz Augusta has gone from a successful sadistic killer to flat-out crazy, and Charlie Shine has decided he's Al Capone.
What about Benny?
Benny is never seen. He's in his house eating cheese ravioli and watching television with his cat. My mom said his wife was moved into a hospice facility yesterday. She's been sick for a long time.
That's sad, I said. I didn't know her, but everyone seemed to like her.
My mom will miss her, Connie said. They were friends for a lot of years.
I finished my lunch and Grandma called.
I need a ride, she said. And I could use some help picking an outfit. Your mother is babysitting for your sister and can't take me. I'd go myself, but they hid the keys to the Buick.
What kind of an outfit? I asked.
Carla Scooch went into hospice yesterday, and she's not expected to last the night, so I need something to wear to the viewing. I want to look respectful for her. She's a nice lady, and she put up with a lot over the years.
Sure, I said. I need to get some new clothes, too. When would you like to go?
Now would be good, Grandma said. Your father is eating at the lodge tonight, and your mother won't be home from Valerie's house until late. Valerie and Albert had to go to some lawyer shindig.
I'm taking Grandma shopping, I said to Potts. Can I possibly do this without you tagging along?
No, Potts said. I'm following you to the end of the earth.
I won't be going that far, I said. Grandma was waiting at the curb, and she was carrying her big black patent purse. This meant she was packing her .45 long barrel. It was frightening to think that she had the gun, but it was good to know she recognized the danger level. She slid onto the passenger side seat and buckled up.
I almost didn't recognize you, she said. You have a new car and a new hairdo.
The car is a loaner from Ranger. The hair is job-related. An FTA threw some gunk at me and it got stuck in my hair.
I like the new cut and color, Grandma said. It's flirty.
Grandma turned and looked at Potts in the back seat.
What do you think?
I'd like to touch it, Potts said. But she won't let me.
Grandma leaned close to me.
He's kind of a creeper, she whispered.
It's that he has no filters, I said.
I heard that, Potts said. That's insightful. There was a time when people thought you were forthright if you said what was on your mind. It was a sign of good character.
When was that time? Grandma asked.
Olden times, Potts said.
Like in the good old days, Grandma said.
Exactly,
Potts said. Chapter 18. I parked by the Macy's entrance for the second time today, and everyone followed me into the store.
I don't want to spend a lot of money, but I want something that looks expensive, Grandma said. And I'm not family, so I don't have to wear black.
Death was almost as important as food in the burg, and life was often lived in such a way to ensure a good showing at the final event. If you joined a lodge or the mob, you got a crowd at your viewing. If you worked your way up to Grand Poobah of the lodge, you got a premier room at the funeral home. The church service was a comfort, but everyone knew it was the casket selection that really counted. 7 o'clock viewings relieved the tedium of after-dinner television. Morning funerals meant whiskey straight up was flowing immediately following the burial. It was all good. Grandma found her way to the dresses and sorted through them.
I don't have a problem like some of the ladies my age, she said. I don't have to worry about hiding a fat roll. I've always had a good metabolism.
Grandma didn't have a fat problem, but she was a victim of gravity. She could walk forever, and she could lug the long barrel around in the crook of her arm like the Queen of England, but beyond that, she had the muscle development of a soup chicken.
This one is nice, she said, pulling out a cranberry A-line dress with a little jacket. I like the color, and the skirt looks like the right length. I like when it hits just below my knee.
She found 3 other dresses and took them into the dressing room to try on.
She's a good shopper, Potts said. She found what she wanted right away. What are you going to buy? Do you need a dress too?
I prowled through the racks. No, I think I'm all set for viewings and funerals.
Then you need better everyday clothes.
The thing is, I'm comfortable in my jeans and t-shirts, I said. They work for my job.
Then just get nice and newer jeans and t-shirts. In the magazines I read at the salon, they dress jeans and t-shirts up with jackets and cool boots.
He searched around and found a black jacket that was a take on a motorcycle jacket.
This is good. It looks like something Indy would wear if he was a girl. According to the tag, it's also abrasion-proof, rip-resistant, breathable, and has waterproof seams.
He gave me the jacket and moved to a table with t-shirts.
Try the jacket with one of these shirts. The material is soft, and I like the plain round neck. It's supposed to be odor-shirking and fast-drying. Try it in white.
I grabbed a pair of dark denim jeans and went to the dressing room. I had the jeans and white shirt on, and Potts came back with more jeans and jackets and sweaters and shirts. I worked my way through the stash and liked everything.
What's your budget? Potts asked. We're in four digits.
That's over my budget, but everything looks great.
If you take everything, you have a week's worth of clothes.
Grandma looked at the bundle of clothes in my arms.
You really need the clothes. I can't remember when you bought work clothes last, and you can even wear these on a date, if anyone ever asks you out.
You need boots or flats, Potts said. Maybe both. You can't wear these outfits with your sneakers.
By the time we got back to the car, I was in a cold sweat and my stomach was sick. I'd blown the entire apprehension check, and I wasn't sure I was comfortable trading my hooded sweatshirt for tailored jackets and chunky sweaters. The ankle-high rubber-soled boots and the black flats were keepers.
I just got a text from your mother, Grandma said. Carla Scooch passed this morning. The viewing is tomorrow with the burial on Saturday. Good thing I didn't wait to go shopping for a dress.
I can't go to viewings and funerals, Potts said. I'm allergic to carnations, and there were always carnations in the flower arrangements. Mostly I get congested, but sometimes I wheeze if there are carnations and lilies. Lilies are the worst. Most funeral directors know CPR and have defibrillators to counteract the lily reactions.
I didn't know that, Grandma said.
I read it somewhere, Potts said. It might have been in the AARP magazine, or I might have seen it on YouTube.
The timer went off on his phone.
I have to eat, he said. I'm overdue for dinner. Are my lips blue? Am I pale?
You're always pale, Grandma said. You need to get more sun.
I can stop at Country Diner when I get off the highway, I said.
That suits me, Grandma said. I eat there sometimes with the girls after bingo. I like their rice pudding.
I need a booth, Potts said. I get agitated if I sit in the middle of a room.
You've got a lot of rules, Grandma said.
I know, Potts said. I'm annoying. I can't help it.
Of course you can help it, Grandma said. Make a list of everything you think is annoying, and then stop doing all the things on the list.
That's a good idea, Potts said. You tell me when I do something annoying, and I'll put it on my list.
I turned off the highway and took Mitchell Street.
What's that noise? Grandma asked.
It's Potts, I said. He's humming.
Good Lord, Grandma said.
Is my humming annoying? Potts asked. It annoys some people.
It annoys me, Grandma said. Put it on your list.
I don't know if I can stop humming, he said. It keeps me calm. I hum during times of stress, also when I'm thinking, and I hum when I'm bored.
How about if you hum on the side of the road watching us drive away and go to the diner without you? Grandma said.
That would be terrible, Potts said. You wouldn't do that, would you?
Problem solved, I said, pulling into the lot to the diner. Here we are. We snagged a booth and gave the waitress our order.
It doesn't seem to me that we're making much progress getting to my treasure, Grandma said. We've got clues, but we only have two of them, and we don't know what they mean without the rest of the clues.
I'm good with clues, Potts said. What are they?
Ace It and Philadelphia, Grandma said.
I see your problem. Standing alone, those clues aren't helpful. How many more clues are there?
Four more, Grandma said. The six gangster owners of the molehole each had a clue to a treasure.
And you want their treasure?
Potts asked.
One of the gangsters was my late husband, Grandma said. I got a rightful claim on his share.
That sounds fair, Potts said. What's the treasure?
We don't know, Grandma said. But we hear it's worth a lot of money. Three of the gangsters are dead, including my honey, Jimmy. The other two are scumbags who are trying to kidnap Stephanie and me.
What about the last one? Potts asked. Will he give you his clue?
We're working on it, Grandma said.
We should go talk to him, Potts said.
His wife just died, I said. Potts looked to Grandma and then to me.
Is that a problem?
I guess we could offer our condolences and work the treasure into the conversation, Grandma said. Our food arrived. Turkey dinner with mashed potatoes and gravy for Grandma, a burger, no bun, for Potts, grilled cheese and fries for me. This is the joy of a Jersey diner, something for everyone.
What about the tunnels? Potts asked. Did you find any clues down there? Sometimes in the movies there are symbols etched into stones or brick walls or wooden beams.
No luck with the tunnels, I said.
My friend Morgan is the fry cook at the Lucky Lucy Cafe. He says there's an old, mostly sealed-up entrance to a tunnel in the basement, and when the Margot blew up, it filled the entire cafe with smoke.
I told you about that, Grandma said to me. Remember? I heard it from Dottie. I had totally forgotten about the Lucky Lucy. I wasn't too keen on going back into the molehole tunnel to look for symbols that had been carved into now charred wooden braces, but the hope that a tunnel entrance from the Lucky Lucy was still at least partially intact was enough to motivate me. Do you think your friend would let us see the sealed-up entrance?
I don't see why not. He should be working until closing today.
I parked in the Lucky Lucy's small side lot and removed a giant maglite from the driver door's pocket. Good for illumination and cracking skulls. We walked around to the front and looked up. A large sign displayed the Lucky Lucy's name, along with a logo of four playing cards, all aces. You think that's the ace it? Grandma said. I didn't want to jinx anything, but I thought there was a pretty good chance. Only one way to find out, I said. Let's talk to Morgan. The Lucky Lucy had booths along the walls and a few tables in the center of the room, all mostly full. A waitress noticed Potts.
Hey, Georgie, looking for Morgan? He's in the kitchen.
Morgan was wearing an apron that covered a small portion of him. My guess was that Morgan ate more fried food than he served. His face was sweaty and greasy from standing over the fryer, and he was singing an unintelligible song to himself.
Potts, my man, Morgan said,
dumping a basket of fries out into a metal tray under a heat lamp.
What's up? You have a cutie and her grandma standing here. Dude, don't ask me to play wingman on this one.
No, it's cool. I was telling Stephanie and her grandma about the tunnel entrance in the basement, Potts said. Is it okay to show him?
Morgan jerked his thumb toward the back of the room.
Basement door is through the storage closet. I go with you, but I have to put some burgers together.
I led the way past tubs of lard and gallon jugs of mayonnaise. A roach the size of a hamster peered at me from between plastic bags filled with burger rolls. I gave an involuntary shiver and pushed on to the door at the far end. I opened the door and looked at the stairs. Not good. Hastily put together a long time ago and not maintained. A couple of boards were at odd angles and obviously loose. I switched the maglite on and carefully went down first. At the bottom of the stairs, a long yellowed string hung down from a bare light bulb. I gave it a pull, and the room lit up enough to show your typical ugly basement. The floor was packed dirt, and there were thick cobwebs in every corner. Grandma and Potts followed me down. Grandma went to a crude wooden door on the far side of the cellar. It had a large, rusted-out metal padlock and ring handle. I have a good feeling about this. Let's get this baby open and find my treasure, Grandma said. She pulled her .45 long barrel out of her purse and aimed it at the lock. Stand back. I've seen this work on TV. There's usually a lot of splintering. Potts looked worried.
I don't do well with splinters. I once had one that took 2 weeks to work its way out. I almost fainted every time I looked at it.
Grandma unloaded a couple of rounds into the wood door, and we all froze. Our eyes focused on the cellar ceiling,
We didn't hear anyone screaming about shots fired or feet stampeding to the front door. It was business as usual in the cafe. Potts put his finger in one ear and then the other.
Check one, check two, sibilance, sibilance, he said. I have delicate eardrums. I hope I didn't rupture one when Grandma shot the gun.
I gave the door a kick, the lock popped off, and the door swung open, revealing the tunnel. It was almost identical to the one attached to the mole hole. I aimed the maglight down the tunnel to my right. I could see the entrance to the passage where the cave-in happened. The tunnel to our left seemed clear, but in a state of neglect and decay. At least the wooden braces weren't charred, but water dripped between boards that were supposedly supporting the tunnel ceiling. The floor of the tunnel was muck.
This doesn't look safe, Potts said. I can feel my sinuses clogging. I think I smell mold.
Mold was the least of our problems. The tunnel reeked of sewer gas and animal rot.
I'll go first, Grandma said, taking the maglite and forging ahead. I'm already too old to die young.
I scrambled to keep up with her, sliding on the sludge, ducking around the worst of the drips. I could hear Potts humming behind me. I had no reception on my cell phone, and my worst fear was that the batteries would fail on the maglite.
Are you looking for etchings and symbols on the walls?
Potts called to Grandma.
Are there street signs down here? Where are we?
I think we gotta be going to Philadelphia, Grandma said. I'm leading the way, so you're in charge of the symbols.
I'll take pictures,
Potts said. Chapter 19.
I don't like this tunnel, Potts said 20 minutes in. I'm cold and wet and muddy. I'm going to have to take zinc and vitamin C when I get home. My mother is going to yell at me when she sees my sneakers.
Grandma's flashlight beam caught a shadowy figure some distance in front of us. It was a black-clad woman, and the silver studs on her boots bounced the light back at us. Gabriella.
Follow her, I said to Grandma. Don't lose her.
My hope was that Gabriella knew what she was doing, because we sure as hell didn't. My fear was that we'd wander forever in the dark until we face-planted in the muck and someone found our bones 10 years from now. An instant later, Gabriella disappeared. It took me a beat to figure it out. There had to be a bend in the tunnel. We hurried after her as best we could, sliding in the muck. We rounded the bend, I caught sight of Gabriella, and then she was gone again.
How is she finding her way without a light? Grandma asked.
Probably has night vision goggles, Potts said. Or maybe she's like a cat woman.
Do you think she knows we're following her? Grandma asked.
I'm sure she can see the maglite, I said. Impossible to know if she was leading us somewhere or running from us. Also impossible to assess the danger level. She could turn around and shoot us all dead. I didn't think a Chardonnay drinker would do this, but you never know. Grandma picked up the pace and forged ahead. I struggled to keep my footing and stay close to her.
Be careful not to fall down in the mud, I said.
Seconds after I said it, Potts went down.
Don't worry about me, he called out. Keep going. I'll probably only get worms or a rash. I hope there aren't any leeches.
I pulled Potts to his feet, and we sloshed on until we came to a fork.
Now what? Grandma asked.
I took the flashlight from her and aimed the light at the tunnel floor. The sludge was too deep to see footprints.
Go left, Potts said. I've been keeping track of a symbol that looks like a bird wing. I can see one on the beam to the left.
Works for me, I said. I'll take over the lead.
After 5 minutes of trudging in the dark, the tunnel widened slightly, and there were rotting wood planks overhead.
It looks like we're under something, Grandma said. It looks like we got a floor over us. Maybe this is it. We could be under the room that has the safe.
The wood ran for about 10 feet, and then the dirt tunnel continued. I wrapped the beams with my maglite, and some of the wood splintered off.
This wood couldn't hold a safe, I said.
I wrapped the ceiling again and punched a hole through to the other side. A couple of boards broke apart and fell into the tunnel. I heard some squealing and high-pitched chirping sounds, and suddenly the air was filled with bats escaping from the hole I'd created.
Bats! Potts yelled. I hate bats!
We all ducked down, and the bats chirped and flapped and swirled around us and took off down the tunnel. The bats were followed by rats. They tumbled out of the hole, squealing and splatting when they landed in the mud.
Rats! Potts yelled. I hate rats!
The rats kept coming, piling up three deep in front of us, jumping and climbing over each other, trying to get out of the muck. I had myself plastered against the tunnel wall. I had my eyes closed tight, but I could feel the rats running over my feet. Think happy thoughts, I told myself. Don't panic. What was the line from Ratatouille? Only the fearless can be great. Only the fearless can be great. Crap, not working. I wasn't fearless. I opened my eyes to see the last few rat stragglers hauling ass down the tunnel.
I think I have rabies, Potts said. Am I foaming at the mouth? Don't anyone get near me.
I directed the flashlight beam into the hole in the overhead flooring. Water was trickling out.
It looks like a large culvert, I said. Maybe part of the sewer system. We can try to climb into it, or we can continue down the tunnel.
The bats and the rats all went down the part of the tunnel we just traveled, Potts said. I don't want to go that way.
Okay, let's go a little further in the other direction, I said. We can always turn around and try the culvert.
We walked for a couple of minutes and came to a dead end. A ladder had been built into the wall, and two stories above the floor of the tunnel, I could see what looked like a round manhole cover that was slightly ajar. A sliver of light outlined part of the opening. I'm going to climb up, I said. Stay down here until I see what's up.